I'm really absolutely thrilled today. And first of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for that first prayer. It completely did me, and I've lost half my mascara already. It was really, really beautiful and very meaningful to me. My name is Diane, and as you've heard, I'm a survivor of exploitation through prostitution and trafficking a very long time ago. And I know that you've heard from people where it's been more recent. For me, it was about 30 years ago. I'm 50 now. I was in my late teens. So I've had a lot of healing, a lot of love, good family, my faith. And I've had the privilege of working, in this area with other women. So, but still, it's amazing. You know, there is still residual stuff. I've worked closely with the Met for many years, and some of the best work that I've done that's had, you know, the greatest impact for victims has been working with the Met, with Kevin's, where Kevin was previously, and Scotland Yard and local officers. And that's been some of the best partnership work I've been involved in. So, it's fantastic to just see this kind of multi-agency response. Today, you know, I have been asked to share from some personal experience, which I will do. And I'm just so excited to hear about the aims of the Santa Marta Group, and just I want to support all of you in any way I can. It's got the key elements to make a massive impact globally, and centered to this partnership working and placing victims at the center so that healing process can start from the very first contact. And as well as being a voice, you can also ensure that the voices of victims and survivors are listened to and directly affect policy and practice. Love and care has no borders or boundaries, and the work that you're collectively involved in and all of the initiatives that are going to come out of that work are doing the opposite of what the traffickers have done. The work that you'll be doing, there'll be transparency, there'll be care, there'll be dignity, there'll be hope, be safety and choice, with no strings attached. Obviously, I've not got a lot of time to tell you the whole story, but my experience of prostitution began over 30 years ago and included the supposed highest end of prostitution, whatever that means, in London, and then being trafficked from this country to a prostitution ring in another country. Basically, you know, I ended up way out of my depth, surrounded by older people who realised they could make a lot of money out of me. Not just madams taking a cut, but people pretending to be my friends who kind of recognised vulnerability and chose instead to cultivate controlling relationships with me. And as all of you will know, control doesn't happen overnight. Grooming is a process. I went from being a happy, confident, trusting girl to finding myself standing in a penthouse, actually in Mayfair. We're not that far away, are we? Being looked over by a madam, and it was like watching it in slow motion happen to someone else. I just didn't have the capacity to know how to extricate myself out of that situation. When the people buying you are famous in government, civil servants, members of other countries' governments, or have diplomatic immunity, you don't have any confidence that you would be believed or protected if you reported violence or rape. And to be honest, in those days, I don't think anyone would have even made a connection that a prostitute could be raped. You know, it was the early 80s, not that far from the 70s. Things were very different. As I said, this was supposedly the top level of prostitution, but it's the same whether you're wearing Prada or Primark. Bruises still feel the same. The grand wallpaper in a minibar doesn't dilute what it feels like when someone has a gun and asks you if you want to see your mum again. Being in a penthouse suite doesn't soften the blow of rape or of having someone leave bite marks all over your face. I never wanted to be involved in this in the first place. I was brought up on Disney. I thought you grow up, you fall in love, some guy rocks up on a horse. I mean, I'm a bit feminist now, so I'm kind of, I'm not in that Disney zoo mode. Although, you know, that might be nice to rock up on the horse. I just thought that was kind of how life was. And so this was very horrific for me. I was always scanning people's faces. I was always on the lookout for help. I was very isolated and controlled, and I was always looking to see that people might see behind the facade of what was presented, but nobody wanted to see. Nobody wanted to ask those questions, because what would that then say about them? They would have to be confronted with the reality of what they were involved in, instead of the fantasy that many people are determined to uphold, because there's just too much money being made in prostitution. I ended up being sent overseas as part of an organised prostitution ring that was sanctioned by the authorities. I got on that plane. Nobody put a gun at my head. I have had a gun to my head, but not in that situation. But the chains of control were invisible, but they're very much there. You know, when you're in that situation, there doesn't need to be physical chains or, you know, the threats at your family. It's enough. After a month in the country I'd been sent to, I managed to get away and get myself to the airport, where I was hidden and helped to get out of the country by a security guard who knew what was happening. He said, "People will be looking for you. I'll hide you in my office and I'll help you get on a flight." And I remember getting to the other end. I cried all the way, and they all thought I was scared of flying, but I was just so relieved to be in the air. And I remember getting to the end and, someone saying to me, "Do you have anything to declare?" And I just wanted to say, "I want my mum." Sorry. Unfortunately, I was met at the other end. So it went on for a while longer. By the end of it, I started having panic attacks, and I actually lost the ability to speak, which, of anyone that knows me, you won't even believe that. You might even wish that it continued a bit longer. I had to write notes to communicate, and eventually I finally got home to Scotland. In terms of how it affects now, and I probably don't know all the answers to that. And as I said, I've been very fortunate. I've had a lot of healing and care in my life. But every now and again, something can trigger something. I can only describe it as kind of a residual awareness of the physical strength of men that I can sometimes find frightening. Not being scared of men, I think it just taps into kind of a body memory of being pinned down and knowing that I can't do anything if that happens. I'm not strong enough. So at the time, it was the early 80s, there was no really understanding about the exploitative nature of prostitution or trafficking. And I was in many ways invisible, but not completely, because as you know with prostitution, it can't be completely invisible, because people that want to pay to buy people have to make that connection too. I had two interactions with police, and one with the airport security in the country I was sent to during that time. And I do remember the interaction with the police at the time. They wanted to say something to me, I wanted them to say something to me, but they just didn't know how to kind of take it further, and actually there would have been nowhere to send me in those days. And that's why it's so exciting to hear about the initiatives that are going on now. Some people who need to be educated by us here today say, "Oh, there's no trafficking, it's all migrant workers, prostitution is empowering, and you're involved in what they call the rescue industry," and they use that as an insult. And let me tell you, there's a place for rescue, you know, as a one-time event. If I'm in a house and it's on fire, I'm not sitting there thinking, "Hang on, Mr. Fireman, do I want to be perceived as a victim? No, I want to get out of there. I want you to break down the door and I want you to come and get me." And rescue was certainly a word that, you know, I used to pray in the strangest of places and say to God, "Isn't this awful? You know, and please rescue me and get me out of this." And eventually I did. My personal experiences took place in rooms where men used their physical strength and positions of power to abuse and degrade and exploit. And today I find myself in this room with all of you, people in positions of power. But the difference is that you are people who don't want to exploit that power that you've been entrusted with. You are people who want to harness your collective power for good, to reach out and to help those exploited and to bring the perpetrators to justice. The people that exploit rely on the belief that no one is going to miss the people that they've got under their control, that they can keep their exploitation invisible, and you're going to prove them wrong. Because you're here today, you're reaffirming the commitment made in April, that commitment to working in partnership on the very important issues of modern slavery and human trafficking. Today, at this minute, there are people in all our countries who, like I did, are wondering if help will ever come. Because you are here today, and what will be sent in motion worldwide because of that, many of those people will be helped, will be safe, and will be supported to rebuild their lives. Of all the places you could be today, thank you with all my heart that you're here. The woman that I am today is very grateful for your commitment to this important work, and the girl that was in her late teens hoping to be seen, hoping for someone to ask the right questions, and hoping for a way out, receives a little bit more healing because of that. Thank you so much for listening.